Welcome in to a Monday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Shaw, joined as always. We are saying that now with no qualifiers, except I just did it. Alex Wolf, and we are talking a perfect 108-105 loss to the Philadelphia 76ers. There were some bright moments. The Knicks played pretty well. I had a great time watching, and they ultimately lost.
Yeah, so definitely good for the tank. But Kevin Knox, man, 31 points, a new career high. He shot very well from the floor and just generally had a fantastic game. So we're going to break that one down in our second segment today.
And then an excellent comeback from Frank Ntilikina and solid efforts from Luke Kornet and Mario Hezonja. All that and more next on the Locked On Knicks podcast.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count it, and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious, like.
To Trier. Trier drives. Oh! Alonzo Trier. Handle across the lane. The Porzingis fires up a three. And boom! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. We are holding to that more than ever of late. We had some good game recaps last week. And, of course, we had the two-parter with our guy, Schwinny Poo. A full Knicks mid-season review. And that was extraordinarily comprehensive, if I do say so myself. We broke down kind of every element of an article that he wrote, talking about the Knicks at the halfway point and how they can get better. So in case you missed that, it is worth checking out. But I don't want to delay any longer. I want to talk about this game because it was awesome. Kevin Knox, you said it, going for a career high, 31 points. The Knicks, after getting down 19-6 in the first quarter, I marked it down 1 minute and 30 seconds into the game. The Knicks were on track to allow 288 points, and after all that, they only give up 108, and they only lose by three. So it was pretty much a perfect game.
Yeah, they even managed to get down 24-8 before they finally started kind of clawing and being respectable in this game, because I made a note as well. It's funny, I made that same note at 19-6, and I said, damn, that's awful. And then I looked back again, and I was like, oh, crap, now they're down 24-8. That's even worse, man. It was looking really terrible for a bit there, and I'm sure that anybody who paid good money to get into the Garden today probably wasn't feeling too good about the investment through the first few minutes. But ultimately, they probably got to see what will go down as one of the better games of the season after everything went down the way it did. You had Kevin Knox, which we'll touch a little more on him in the second segment, but as you already said, the 31 points, a career high. Frank Ntilikina made his return from injury. He looked pretty good. He checked in off the bench at about 5 minutes left in the first quarter. And he logged almost 30 minutes today, which was certainly encouraging. Then you had Luke Kornet had over 30 minutes again off the bench. He had 23 points. It's kind of funny with Kornet. He can't seem to eclipse that 23-point mark. It's like his kryptonite. He gets to 23 points and then he just can't score another point. I don't know what it is with him, but he's now tied his career high, I think, twice this season that he had set last season. I just found that kind of funny.
Yeah, the glass ceiling is very real for Luke Kornet, but the comeback was really, I don't know, I like once you like even the first couple of minutes of the game, even though the Knicks were getting run, was kind of fun just because of how up-tempo it was. And Ben Simmons had a bunch of cool dunks. And then from there, the Knicks played like a pretty much like, at least by their standards, perfect game. We're going to get a little bit more into Knox in the next segment. But I just thought he set the tone early, like hitting that initial three. And then he just like bullied Landry Shamet on his first bucket. Like I think Landry Shamet like ended up on the ground, like under the basket after the play, and Knox just laid it in, and it really set the tone for the rest of the game. And then Frank brought some great energy off the bench. Mario Hezonja was super active early going, but I really want to focus in on that third quarter because it was kind of surprising the way the Knicks dominated the Sixers over that period. I think it was 32-17. They had their best passing sequence of the season. It was this play where, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It was essentially Dotson handed it off to Moutier, who was double-teamed. Then he kind of flipped it to Kornet at the top of the key, who threw it into the corner to Lance Thomas. And then there were like two defenders there, and Thomas just put a perfect bounce pass into Moutier cutting for a dunk. And it was just the type of play you haven't really seen the Knicks make the last couple of weeks. And I thought the absence of Tim Hardaway was notable in the way it forced the Knicks to kind of spread the ball around. And I think it really evened out the shot distribution to a degree. And now none of that's sustainable unless you have guys like Cornette and Knox play way above their heads like they did today. But when it was working, it looked really, really good. And I think it added up to a product that was more fun than almost anything else we've seen from the Knicks this season.
Yeah, I mean, that third quarter was fantastic, and really just the whole second half. Because if you look at the first half, the Knicks got outscored 66-50. Second half, they won 55-42. So they were, I mean, within 3 points, obviously, is because that was the final line. But I mean, they were almost as dominant in the second half as the Sixers were in the first half, which is crazy when you think about just how dominant the Sixers were in the first half. Like, if the Knicks weren't coming back from that huge deficit, it would have been a lot more about how dominant the Knicks were in that half than, you know, the fact that they kind of clawed back and came up short. But yeah, I agree. I mean, there was some really cool actions. I think JB from Knicks Film School put up a video about some varied ways that they were using Cornette today, which was cool to see, kind of some new wrinkles to using him. They had him like slip screens a couple times. At one point, he was setting an off-ball screen for, I want to say it was Dotson. I'm not 100% off the top of my head, but he was setting an off-ball screen and then just took a beeline to the hoop instead of kind of sticking around in that area to see the screen out. And Frank hit him with this like beautiful pass. That was actually in the first quarter, I think, or maybe the second. It was one of Frank's first plays that he had assisted on or scored on for the day. And then, you know, after that, there was some other cool little actions too. I made a special note of one in the third quarter. There was a point where Frank had the ball up at the top of the key, and then Dotson came up and acted like he was going to set a screen for Frank. And then Frank kind of started driving into the lane and drew both defenders with him and just kicked it out to Dot, who had a wide open three. And I thought that was a great look. It was interesting. It seemed like things were a little varied for them today, and maybe it had something to do with, and I saw some people speculating about this. I don't want to go so far as to say like, oh, the team was like for sure better without Tim and Cantor today. But certainly without having Tim out there, the team was not like in that. They didn't feel at all. It seemed like that they had to feed anybody in particular other than maybe Knox at a certain point because he was scoring so much. But nothing really felt forced about the offense today. Like, it didn't feel like they were really looking for one person above all else just to make sure that someone got their shots, or just because they felt like that's the person that should be taking the shot. It just kind of seemed like they were running sets that were just designed to get anybody an open shot. And it was also helpful too. I mean, it should be noted that Frank played all the minutes that Trey Burke has been occupying recently. And Burke is kind of a notorious ISO, you know, look for his own shot kind of guy. And even Alonzo Trier only played a little less than 12 minutes, which is about as close to a punishment for him as you've seen from Fizdale recently, because Fizdale's kind of given Trier free rein to do what he wants. And he kind of reined him in a little bit today too.
Yeah. And I think it's worth putting a couple of qualifiers on it, in that the Sixers have had like a tendency all season to build up really big leads and then give them up, and also kind of play up or down to the level of competition. And again, on the Hardaway front, I think it's worth saying, like, again, like, if Cornette and Knox don't shoot out of their minds, like, the Knicks probably do get blown out. But to your point on the actions, like, that was something I noticed too. And in particular, in the one you referenced with Cornette, that was something I made a note of a couple of times. And I think it was funny, because I'm pretty sure I know where it came from. Portland was burning them on that same play again and again and again. And Jake Lehman, who went to the University of Maryland the same time my friend was there, and people apparently called him Jake Chick-fil-A-man because he'd always be a Chick-fil-A. Not a great story, but one worth telling every time I bring him up. He would just, like, he'd set those back screens and then he would just roll for wide open layups. And it was like, this like simple, like high school level play, but it seemed to mystify the Knicks defensively. And I feel like Fizdale noticed that and was like, hey, I wonder if we could pull that off. And I think it was really impressive, just the timing Frank had on those types of plays. And not to say that Moutier or Burke couldn't have pulled that off, but coming off of injury to still be like that in tune and like to be able to throw those passes like perfectly, like I think that's like it's representative of the type of true, or I don't know, true, like makes it sound like you're hating on scoring guards, but I guess like old school style point guard that Frank Ntilikina can be down the road. But I don't really want to spoil our last segment, so let's take it to a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Kevin Knox a little bit, and then in our third and final segment, we'll get more into Ntilikina and Cornett. That next on Locked On Knicks.
And welcome back to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. I'm here with Gavin Shaw. We're breaking down the Knicks' close loss to Philly, but encouraging. You know, 108 to 105, only 3 points, and what could have been a much worse loss. And obviously, the big shining star of this game was Kevin Knox. He was 12 for 23, 31 points, 4-9 from three-point range. He had 7 rebounds and 4 steals. Pretty awesome game from him. He also finished as a plus 11 for the game, which was one of 5 players to finish with a positive plus minus for this game. So all in all, pretty impressive for him. I mean, early on, he came out with a good design play. It might have been their first points of the game. I'm blanking. It's the first note I took. It was the first points of the game then. I knew it was the first note I took. He had a really nice design play for a floater to start, which it was good to see that they were looking to get him involved first thing. The thing that really stood out to me today, more so than just the shooting, was because his 3-point shot looked good. It looked fluid. He made a good percentage today, which was good to see. But the thing that really stood out to me was that he was looking for contact in the lane more today. The floater's been a great move for him, and it's been a great shot for him to take. But he wasn't strictly looking for that today. He wasn't bailing out on getting to the hoop. And he actually, I mean, he managed to draw a few fouls. He shot 4 free throws for the game, made 3 out of 4. But even more so than that, I mean, even on things that weren't called fouls, he was kind of going right into the teeth of the defense and getting up in there and finishing, which was really encouraging to see, because the second that he unlocks that is the second that he becomes a next level scorer in this league already as a rookie at, dare I say, only 19 years old.
Yeah, I thought the biggest statistic and the only thing you left out is that I think maybe I might have missed an early season one, but this is the first time I've heard Mike Breen give him the bang treatment, which in my mind is almost like, well, welcome to Knicks royalty. You made it. You have a permanent spot. You're getting your number retired. That's it. That sequence was awesome. But just the variety he showed in his game today, and that's a term I use with him a lot, but it was just everything was working. He had the early floater. He had the play that I mentioned in the first segment where he just totally bullied Shamet. He was stroking threes. He had that really nice backdoor cut that Mario Hezonja, of all people, threw like a beautiful against the grain bounce pass to him where he just beat Simmons off the block. And it was kind of fun to see him and Simmons regarding each other for a good portion of the game go back and forth, because Simmons had like a ridiculous day in his own right, 20 points, 22 rebounds, 9 assists. But Knox was just torching everyone that Philly threw at him. And I thought it was kind of the ultimate sign of respect that the Sixers had Jimmy Butler just trailing around this 19-year-old guy. I don't know if we mentioned that the entire fourth quarter. And it was just kind of a welcome to the NBA moment for Kevin Knox, even halfway through his rookie season. It was special. It was fun to watch. And I think a sign of things to come for him.
Yeah, for sure. To build on your point about him just rolling through some guys tonight, or this afternoon, we're talking at the nighttime, but this afternoon, there was one of my favorite ones was he totally just steamrolled Korkmaz in the third quarter as well. I mean, it was like I was saying, it was just so weird to see Knox just so like willing to put his body on the line tonight. I don't know if maybe it's something that Fizdale instilled in him in practice or something, like just get out there and freaking hit some people, like give it a shot, see what happens. You know, you used to play football. He was a quarterback, so he certainly wasn't used to getting hit, I would assume. But, it seemed like he just had that mindset to just go out there and just make this his game today, and he certainly did that. I can't say enough how impressed I was by him. He really he inspired a lot of confidence today. Like, when you watched him play, you really thought that he was going – you feel like he's on the path towards being something great, you know, towards – maybe an all-star, maybe even just a starter for like 15 years. But today's one of those games that really kind of hammers home that he looks like a for real NBA prospect. And then I just wanted to note one more thing too on Knox. I don't know why I just noticed this today, but he's just like so polite still. Like, and it probably has to do with the fact that he's like still a rookie and, you know, doesn't have that like don't give a shit streak in him yet that most guys have after a few years. But there was one sequence where like he was jumping to try to get try to deflect a pass or something, and his leg kicked up and it like inadvertently kind of kicked Butler, and I don't know if it like got stuck in his jersey or if like Butler inadvertently like grabbed his leg or something, but Knox kind of like struggled with it for a sec and got free, and he made a point to like turn around and be like I'm sorry to Jimmy Butler, and then he intentionally fouled who is it, Redick, late in the game, you know, to send him to the line, and it came off a little harder than it should have, and Redick hit the ground from it, and Knox too, like, first thing just like ran right up to him, was like, I'm sorry, man, I'm sorry. Like, it's just funny how he still kind of has that like that deference to him, you know, yeah, like towards his fellow players, and, you know, just still is just such a polite kid. It's just kind of fun to see. I don't know, it's just something I noticed throughout the game.
Yeah, no, it's like, and it's interesting because some guys like come into the league like with that attitude of like fuck everyone, I'm not your friend, like on the court, and like I feel like that's kind of like force instilled by probably some coaches and teammates, like when Knox went up against KD like a few days ago, like I'm sure like everyone else in the Knicks were telling him like look, like we get like he's your hero, but when you get on the court with him, like that guy, like he's not your friend, you got to go at him, you got to try and kill him. And I almost like I think I'm in agreement with you where like I almost prefer it where like they maintain that level of innocence, because like how, like, I mean, obviously like he's like an amazing talent and like hopefully at some point he's in the conversation with some of these guys, but like how cool is that as a 19-year-old, you're getting to go out there and compete with your idols. Like I know on like a personal level, like if I was lucky enough to have that level of ability, like I'd be the exact same way. Like I'd be like, oh no, did I just like piss off Jimmy Butler? I can't live with myself if I pissed off Jimmy Butler. I don't want to knock down JJ Redick. So I do appreciate that. It's very, In the original, like Mike, it's very, very reminiscent of that, which is an all-time great movie. So I really liked it. One more play I want to note with him that I totally forgot to mention last time I was talking, but when he just drove into the lane on a fast break and went right into Embiid's body and then finished by like putting the ball over his head and kind of, it was like a half hook shot, half lay-in, but that I feel like that's an underrated ability and one that you rarely see big guys develop, because it's something that you associate with a Kyrie Irving, a Kemba Walker, and Isaiah Thomas, because when you're sub 6'3", you have to be extraordinarily creative and you have to combine that with a great touch to be a consistent finisher in the NBA. That's the reality of it. You're shooting over 7-footers at all times. But when you have, I mean, I guess even just beyond the touch and the physicality, which you love to see with Knox, just the savviness to know how to create space without committing an offensive foul, and then you also have the ability to actually make the shot. Like that combination is, and again, you don't want to get ahead of yourself. It's just one shot. It's just one game. Like he's coming off 3 games where he played like shit, but you see those flashes, and again, it gets you really, really excited for the future.
We should probably move on, get on some of the other guys in this game. So when we come back, we'll talk about Frank Ntilikina and his return to the court today. Talk about Luke Kornet and his standout game. Talk a little bit about Mario Hezonja and how he played today, which was actually pretty well again. And we'll talk about the re-emergence of Dr. Moutier and Mr. Boutier, as it were, when we come back on Locked On Knicks.
Third and final segment with you on this Monday morning. Hope we made your commute or your 30-minute poop break a little bit easier. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with you. We all take him. It was a 108-105 loss against the Philadelphia 76ers. And let's get into kind of the tertiary guys. We already covered Kevin Knox's career night, but a couple other Knicks really shining. We got into it a little bit with Frank Ntilikina. Very solid passing on some of those set plays. But I really liked what I saw from him from a scoring perspective. And he was just 4 of 11 from the field, which is obviously less than ideal from an efficiency perspective. But just the fact that he was kind of consistently attacking the matchup with TJ McConnell, where, I mean, McConnell's a sturdy defender. I'm trying to think of the best word for it. He's kind of like a gnat. He's an annoying defender. But Ntilikina has about 7 or 8 inches on him, and he would use it. Like, he kept getting to the rim, kind of Euro stepping around him. And there were a few times like he just didn't quite have the touch to finish, or help came over and he set up a putback for someone. But I thought his consistent aggressiveness, both in terms of just drawing defenders and getting shots up, was really a boon for the Knicks offense, even though he didn't shoot all that well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what was good was I feel like Frank today at least secured himself a few more games worth of playing because he was super, super aggressive, which was good. I have kind of a hot take that I may as well just deliver now, and then I'll get into reasons why I think it should happen. If, in fact, David Fizdale listens to Locked On Knicks and heard us saying multiple times over the last few days that he should shut Tim Hardaway down, which he did for today, which was cool to see. Maybe he'll listen to this as well. But if Hardaway's still out for a little bit with rehabbing, you know, his hamstring cramps or whatever it was that his hamstring thing wound up being, plus his plantar fasciitis and all these other little nicks and scrapes that he's gotten so far, I think it might be a good idea to start Frank. I think he deserves another shot at that role. And I don't necessarily know who I want him to replace in the starting lineup as it was today. So today it was Moutier, Dotson, Knox, Vonleh, and Lance Thomas, which I can't say I want Lance Thomas back in there. I actually think the lineup that I made a special note of was Frank, Moutier, Dotson, Knox, and Cornette. That was the lineup that kind of made a run down the stretch. That brought the game really close and almost sealed it for the Knicks. I think that could be an intriguing lineup to trot out there to start the game because that would bring a lot of energy. But I don't know for sure about that. But to get back into Frank, I want him to start, and here's why. There's a bunch of like evidence from this game. First off, he just seemed like he was just like sprinting down the floor from the second he got in there today. I mean, he was clearly like raring to go. I mean, he was chomping at the bit, and when he finally got in there, he was just like ripping it up and down the floor. I mean, the second that the ball touched his hands on offense, he was looking to either score himself or he was looking for someone to pass to. And he was making very quick, very efficient decisions today. He wound up with, what was it, 5 assists today? 6 assists, even better. And then the shooting, he was 4 of 11, but it wasn't so much that he was taking bad shots. A few times he kind of just ran into one of the best rim defenders in the league and Joel Embiid and got the shit stuffed out of him. But that's going to happen to a lot of guys when they go up against Joel Embiid. And I'd rather see him taking those than, you know, being tentative and not taking them. And then one of my favorite sequences of the game involved him and Embiid. He had a layup versus Embiid. And then Embiid, like, while contesting, kind of flat-tired Frank a little bit. So they ran, the Sixers ran down the other end. Frank's like fixing his shoe back down at the Knicks basket. And Frank comes just like barreling down the court. Embiid had the ball at the top of the key. And Frank steals the ball from him and then immediately gets out on the fast break and hits Knox for a transition layup. So it was just that sort of energy today that just made me think that maybe it's time to give Frank another shot at starting again. Just because one of the biggest knocks on Frank is being sort of low energy. And not necessarily looking like he's aggressive and wants to be in it on offense, you know, like he had a tendency, and it might have just been game plan wise or whatever, to just kind of sit in the corner at times this year. But today, I mean, he was looking to get offense for himself, but also to get everybody else involved in offense. I thought it was one of his better defensive games that he's played in a while. Like, he was really just, I made a note that on a number of sequences, he looked like he was basically playing free safety out there. Like, he was just bouncing from guy to guy on the perimeter and making sure everybody was covering their switches and everything else. I don't know. I was super, super impressed with how he played today. The stats won't really wow you, you know, 10 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, but it's enough that I think he definitely deserves another shot at this thing and definitely should get another shot starting.
And to your point on him playing free safety, I thought even outside of the one where he stripped Embiid, he might have had the defensive play of the day. I think like 3.5 minutes left.
Butler got a step on Dotson, and Frank was just kind of hovering, like with 1 foot in the paint, 1 foot out, and he just took a step out, and Butler tried to shoot over him. It's almost like he didn't anticipate
like how freakishly long Frank's arms are, and he just barely got a finger on it, kind of deflected it, recovered the ball, pushed it up the court, and it eventually got to Knox for what ended up being the play of the game, the moment of the Knicks' last like 10 games, if you really want to stretch it out. That got the bang from Mike Breen, so that was just, I mean, just great intuitiveness. And then again, what kind of makes Frank special, that wingspan and that ability to alter shots that 95% of point guards can't even dream of getting to. So I thought that was awesome. And it's interesting, your argument on the starting lineup. I'd certainly be intrigued to see that initial group a little bit more. I think the reason that Cornette in particular didn't start today is because he's just been getting torched at the start of games, and on paper, Embiid is just the worst possible matchup for him, someone who can just bully him to death with raw size advantage and physicality. But Cornette was actually like excellent when he came in. And I thought, like, to me, like, he was the most essential part of that third quarter run. He hit a really big three where Embiid just kind of challenged him to make one. Like, he was literally like 6-7 feet off of him, and he said, all right, go ahead, shoot it. And he drained it. He beat Embiid off the dribble a few times. And I think more importantly than anything else, he kind of got in Embiid's head, which I think really tends to throw Philly out of rhythm. And they obviously don't totally have that dynamic figured out between Embiid, Butler, and Simmons. And that was kind of keyed by Cornette just frustrating him and like sort of fouling him, not really fouling him. And then Embiid basically like made it his mission to like murder Cornette when like he just shoved him on the drive. And then either intentionally or unintentionally, depending which side of the argument you want to fall on, kind of headbutted Cornette in the chin going up for that layup at the end of the third quarter. But there was a reason it was happening. That was because Cornette was pretty much torching him on the other end. So I thought that was kind of cool. And if you told me at any point this season, I would say that Cornette was giving Joel Embiid the business, I would have called you a liar. So that was just a joy to watch.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, Cornette, like, I don't know, he flashed, I already touched on it briefly earlier, but he flashed some stuff today that I didn't really know that he had. In particular, the driving to the hoop, like, just was kind of a revelation, because if he can... He doesn't have a good first step. Like, that's the real thing here. And that's why, you know, his dribble drive game is never going to be anything too special. But if he can get his pump fake to a point where he can get the ball at the 3-point line and pump fake a guy enough to get just that little step on him. And, it, you know, once he actually gets rolling, he has those long legs, so he can get to the hoop in about 2 to 3 steps and like 2 dribbles. If he can kind of master that, like, that's a whole new weapon for him. And that's really something that we hadn't seen too much before today, and that he busted out, I don't know, probably at least 2 or 3 times today, and to great effect, you know, against multiple defenders as well. So I thought that was pretty cool to see. Also, just him slashing a little more today. I don't know if slashing is the right word. Just cutting to the hoop, you know, making backdoor cuts, whatever. We touched on that one that, you know, he received that pass from Frank on that nice little cut backdoor at one point. It's, I don't know, his play today was... it's kind of funny to say that I'm not sure if this was his best game overall, because like that first game that he started was so good, and he's had a couple really good games since then. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say, from a skill set perspective, this was for sure his most impressive game today, because he seemed to have a more developed skill set. I will say, though, like, I'm still kind of blown away by the fact that teams just don't seem to respect him out at the 3-point line. Like, I don't know, like, sometimes they were challenging him today, but other times they were leaving him completely wide open. And that was just really strange to me, because he's shown through this limited sample size, but still, that he can be a really lethal 3-point shooter, especially if you leave him wide open with no contest out there. But at risk of going too long on him, I wanted to personally, it's been my favorite little wrinkle lately. I'm now calling it Dr. Moutier and Mr. Boutier, in a nod to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, of, you know, Moutier just having such a 180 from the first half to the second half lately. And this was the second straight game where he went from doing basically nothing in the first half to like totally killing it in the second half. First half, he had 6 points, 2-6 shooting, 0 assists, 1 turnover, and he was a minus 24 in the first half. Second half, he had 13 points on 5-11 shooting, 4 assists, 2 turnovers, and he was a plus 13 in the second half. So he finishes with 19 points. Just like a totally insane turnaround for Moutier again. And I don't know. I don't know if it's just the personnel of who he's out there with or just if he's really good at making halftime adjustments lately, but it's just been really funny to me. I don't know, just to see how much of a complete change he goes through at halftime these last couple games.
Yeah, no, I was actually shocked that he even finished with 19 points. Like my initial, like I would have guessed before looking at the box score that he had maybe 10 or 11. But I guess my theory on it is that like I think he has a tendency to get a little bit too down on himself at times when things don't immediately go well for him at the start of the game. Like against like Golden State, it was kind of like a slow like pattern of self-destruction where he had these repeated turnovers and then just didn't really do much for the rest of the night. And then it was kind of similar the last two times out where even in this game in the first half, he had a drive. And this is, I think, one of his worst tendencies where he just kind of over-penetrated and did so without having much of a plan of what to do with the basketball and gave it up. And from that point forward, I didn't really see him be aggressive. And he was just kind of like you didn't even notice when he was in the game the rest of the first half. And then in the second, clearly, like Fizdale talked to him and kind of like slapped him on the butt and said, "Let's go, let's figure this out." And he like played with kind of a renewed verve and energy and confidence. And I think, I mean, again, that's kind of inherent for a 22-year-old who's been beat down a little bit their whole career by both like expectations and like his inability, at least up to this point, to live up to them. So I think as the year goes on, he continues to get more comfortable with him being himself as an effective player. I think that problem is going to kind of resolve itself. And it's certainly on Fizdale to keep his confidence up a little bit. But if I had to kind of pin a theory on it, that would be it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does kind of seem that way. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much confidence is an issue for him at this point. I just think maybe, I don't know. It's hard to nail down because it just kind of seems like he, at least the last two games, he's come out and he looks to do some of the stuff that he normally does with, you know, decent results usually. And it just hasn't been working. And then something just clicks with him in the second half where maybe it's his timing gets a little better, or he's making decisions a little bit quicker. Maybe it just takes him a half to kind of get acclimated, like to see what the defense is giving him before he kind of, you know, talks with Fizz or whatever and figures out a game plan for the second half. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it is between his ears too. I'm not 100%, but it's just, I don't know. It's been so interesting to me to watch. And I've been happy with the second half results lately. Like I'd certainly rather him play really well in the second half. I just kind of wish we didn't have to sit through a complete trash first half to get there. But yeah, I don't know. In general, I'm just hoping maybe he can capture the Moutier again and maybe put Moutier away for a little bit. But I guess we'll kind of see what happens in this next game and see maybe if he can figure it out from there. I do think though, and I think we talked about this with Schwinn the other day, that maybe he and Frank could make a good tandem together because of the fact that then it kind of splits up ball handling duties, which it definitely did today. Like Frank got to take the ball down sometimes. Moutier took it down other times. I'd like to see that combo out there more. Like they had their success today. Like I already said with to circle back to the lineup that I liked with the Frank, Moutier, Dotson, Knox, and Cornette. I think that's something worth exploring, and I certainly hope that Fizdale does if he wants a lineup that can go out there and really kind of spark things a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think it's better in general when Moutier plays with a group that's more prone to running and less prone to being in the half court. And like obviously, like part of that is like Moutier's effect or relative effectiveness at times in transition, and just the idea that it kind of, I mean, lights a little bit of a fire under his ass, and like he plays with a little more verve, because again, that's just kind of what I noticed from him first half to second half, game after game. But that's about all we had on these guys. But I did, Alex, I wanted to enlighten you a little bit on some of the MSG broadcast discourse in this game, because you were forced to watch a replay of the Sixers version of the stream. And it was like a pretty like thrilling broadcast for me anyways. And yeah, I had some theories come out of it. They, David Fizdale's high school coach, if I heard correctly, was in attendance. And he told a story about how A teammate of David Fizdale tried to pull a Lou Will and date two girls simultaneously, and the two girls were basically going to kill him, and how Fizdale kind of talked them off the ledge. And I thought that was pretty spectacular. But then my even bigger note from that was both like Clyde and Mike Breen reminiscing about their respective high school coaches. And Mike Breen, at one point, he went to Salesian High School, and he said, quote, "You learn so much about the game and life as well." And just the way he said it, he kind of lingered on the life part. It made me think that Mike Breen's high school coach taught him about sex and gave him the birds and the bees talk. And I know that seems like a logical jump, but it just that's immediately what clicked in my head. And you just kind of lingered on the words in a certain way. So I know you didn't watch it. I know you can't have a fully formed reaction because of that, but that was my takeaway. And I thought it was kind of crucial to understanding this game.
I feel very bad for having missed the MSG broadcast. Now, it was funny story today, because it was, you know, Sunday afternoon. I totally did not. It was just totally my bad. I haven't missed, other than the time from like my wedding and stuff, I haven't missed watching a game live probably like more than two or three times this year. And all of a sudden I like just opened up Twitter at like 2:30, and there's all this like Knicks game stuff going on. I was like, what is going on? And I wasn't even in the house. I was not near a TV. I had no way of watching it. And when I got home, I found, you know, one of those completely legal sites where you can go and watch games after they've already happened.
I love those legal sites.
And I looked through all three completely legal links on that site, and all three of them were the Sixers broadcast. And let me just tell you, their broadcast team, I mean, they work hard and they're fine and whatever, but they're boring and they are not nearly as interesting to listen to as Breen and Clyde. So I feel kind of upset that I missed that. Also, the Sixers broadcast, like every 5 seconds, is sponsored by some new sponsor. I don't know what it was. It was like they had like the Toyota Fast Break followed by like the Santander Bank Helping Hand or whatever, followed by like the Wawa Quick Check Give and Go, blah, 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 bullshit. Like it was ridiculous. Like every 3 seconds was sponsored by somebody new. So like you never had that like fun little discourse, because they were filling in so many like little, all those little like, you know, replay segments and all that crap that they had to get in. It was just very, very not fun. I don't know. I don't want to not watch MSG again, unless it's Breen and Dorsberg.
No, that's a great call. All right. With that, we wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Certainly feel free to interact with us on Twitter a little bit. Give us your thoughts on Knox's career night, Breen's sex ed from his high school coach, whatever you want to take away from this podcast. We'd love to hear about it and love to interact and have a conversation with you guys. We will be back into action throughout this week. The Knicks head to London on Thursday, presumably earlier, but they play in London on Thursday against the Wizards. And then I think their next game is Sunday, and I'm going to be out of town for a lot of this week. So we're going to figure out the schedule in terms of podcasts, but we will certainly be back before that Thursday game to give you a preview of what to expect in London. So for Alex, I'm Gavin. Peace out. Have a great week.